I am Planta on the line. This is the commentary.ca. Michael Klassen joins me again. He is a co-editor of citycaucus.com. And we'll continue looking at what's going on municipally on their site. They have some great pieces looking at the past, present, and future of Vancouver's NPA party. He is the president of Thinking Cap and a former vice chair of Vancouver's planning committee. Visit the City Caucus website, citycaucus.com, and Mike's own site, michaelklassen.com. Please welcome back to the Planta Online program, Mike Klassen. Good morning, Mr. Klassen.
Hello, Joe.
Thanks for joining us.
You're welcome. So the
articles that you have on today are that talking about the future of the NPA. You have Sean Bickerton. He was a candidate in the last municipal election, right?
Correct.
The NPA's general meeting, the annual general meeting, is when?
It's on Wednesday evening, so the recording right now, it's tomorrow evening.
Yeah. Are you a member of the party?
Yeah, I think I have a membership that hasn't lapsed yet. I think I was being really optimistic a couple of years ago and bought a three-year membership.
Well, what's at stake at this meeting?
Gosh, that's a good question. What's at stake, I think, is a little bit of the reputation of the organization. And what I mean by that is that I've talked to quite a number of people that I know that have one relationship or another at the NPA, either as members or have been former candidates or have participated with the organization, and almost none of them know about the meeting. So I don't know why that is.
Now, is it possible that the NPA will be viable again? That it'll matter, perhaps, in the discourse in the city?
Well, I can't answer that question. I can take a guess. Let me share with what some of the things that I've read and other people have said to me.
Yeah.
My cohort, Daniel Fontaine. Daniel, who worked for a long time with the organization, he ran as president a number of years ago. He ran the election campaign. It's well known for Jennifer Clark when she had her difficult patch and ran for mayor. Daniel is somebody who I think reads the tea leaves quite well in politics, and he thinks they haven't really got a shot to go forward. Sure, there's a heck of a lot of assets that the NPA have. First of all, they're obviously a known quantity. They are identified as the organization that embodies the coalition of center-right leaning supporters, and it is the very definition of center-right politics in the city of Vancouver at this time. They have a membership list. It's not as large as Visions, but it's a dedicated one nonetheless, I'm sure. They have a constitution. They have a track record. They've elected untold numbers of councils and elected officials and mayors over the last 70 years. You don't really want to turn your back on all of that, but it still is sometimes political organizations just kind of run their course, and there's a lot of people out there that are asking that question.
Now, Mr. Bickerton has a piece on your website today. What does he say?
I think the thrust of what Sean is saying is the NPA, as it stands right now, the people that are working behind the scenes are highly representative of the flavor of the city. I think he's fairly accurate on that front. I've met a number of the members of the board. There's a great number of very new faces there, really bright, accomplished people. A lot of them are business people, so they usually don't have a heck of a lot of extra time, especially in this economy, for running a political organization. And I think that that's more, one of the reasons to blame for some of the silence we're getting from the NPA is that the board right now is a bit stretched and they just haven't got a lot of time. But I don't count that as a really good excuse. They need to get into gear if they want to be serious.
So other than websites like yours, who holds the feet of this government to the fire?
Suzanne Anton is taking on some issues at City Council. Ian Robertson is trying to make sure that good things happen with the Park Commission. And Carol Gibson and Ken DeNike are extremely qualified school trustees. But boy, I tell you, I mean, the numbers speak for themselves. They're, you know, the in the case of the park board and the council, they only have one vote. They don't have the ability to even get a motion seconded if they wanted to get any real discussion going as opposition. So these are tough times to be in opposition. And over the school board, it's not everybody's cup of tea, but it's an important level of government. And, you know, some good work's happening, but you're still outnumbered. And during these times when you've got a school board that has essentially been sort of bought and paid for by the trade unions that supported the vision and co-candidates, it's hard to really get a word in edgewise, I think.
Now, you and Daniel had an op-ed in the Sun last week. What did you discuss there?
One of the things that we find that keeps us most busy at City Caucus is trying to explain some of the political spin that's coming out of City Hall. And let's face it, they've hired a brand new director of communications, Robin Adair, who coincidentally was a BC Liberal candidate,
right,
in the spring election. Robin comes from a background of television. You may know his face if you watched any of the programming from Vancouver Island.
Yeah, from Chuck, yeah.
Robin is extremely talented, and he is helping them to reshape some of their message. So the work of City Caucus has become even more challenging because of Robin. But we felt that when you looked at the message that came out from the city manager, Penny Ballam, and from the mayor, they used words like, crisis, and we kind of had to stop, take a step back and look at the numbers. Sure, $60 million shortfall is a lot of money for the city of Vancouver, but it is a billion-dollar a year operation. So if you start to crunch the numbers and look at the history of how budgets are done, there always is a lot of horse trading that takes place in the months leading up to a budget. And we think that what Vision are really trying to do, and I think that they're having some sway with people, is they're trying to show themselves as fiscally responsible, and in some cases even more fiscally conservative than the NPA. So they're trying to show themselves as the proverbial white knights. We can come in, we can take a difficult budget and make it into something that works for the taxpayers. But, if you look back at what they did in December, they had pretty much the same numbers. They had about $57.8 million, I think, was the shortfall. But you didn't hear as much noise about it. So what we did in the Sun is we just said, look, the City Hall, traditionally when you're dealing with budgets, they will have a number of hard choices to make. But if they really wanted to make some change, they should look at the provisions for contracting out. And because those do exist in the current collective agreement, which was won after the very difficult 2007 strike, and we said, you know, before you tell us that, you know, you need to raise taxes or that you need to lay off all these people and cut back on services, tell us that you're really doing everything possible to save money and looking at options like contracting out.
This op-ed in the Sun sort of signals to me that the mainstream press, the so-called mainstream press, are taking blogs and the sort seriously, websites seriously. We talked last week about just the number of websites and blogs there are on municipal and urban affairs. There seems to be more now than ever before. What do you make of just the sheer numbers of commentators online that appear now to talk about things that we wouldn't have seen 5 years ago, say?
Well, I think there's a few reasons for it. First of all, you've got that critical mass now. I mean, the Internet's, you know, I have to remind people, the Internet's not very old. The World Wide Web is not very old. So the fact that, you know, people gather up most of their news and and their communication online now is a relatively new phenomenon. It wasn't as prevalent, 4 years ago or 6 years ago or 8 years ago. So, you know, we're kind of a natural part of the evolution of web communications. The interest in civic affairs, we started at City Caucus because we felt that the politics that resonate with most people are local politics. The issues that are closest at hand are the ones at City Hall, and I think we were right to a certain extent. We've garnered a bit of a following, and then Francis Beulah also has a following, and there's a lot of interest in local issues, and it's sometimes the most parochial politics you can imagine, but it's the one that really gets people fired up, and I think that maybe our success at getting a growing audience is just because of that.
Now, does a growing audience mean a more informed voter? A more engaged voter, I should say.
I agree entirely with the idea that's what's happening here. Now, I learn something new every day, and that's probably why I continue doing City Caucus. I mean, I'm the city of Vancouver and its operations. It's a very large enterprise. So, you could almost be going to school and learning about how the city runs every day. So that's part of the appeal for me, but I think that we're turning over a few leaves that have not been turned over in the past, like discussing the influence of the media in politics, for example. The mainstream media have never done that. We have, we've talked about, and we've been hard on this because we think it's important. We've talked about whether issues of bias when it comes to other people. For a long time, the only people that you would ever read about City Hall were Alan Garr and Frances Beulah over when she was running for the Vancouver Sun, and that was about it. Occasionally you'd hear some discussion from Stephen Quinn over at CBC Radio, but really, beyond that, there wasn't anybody else who was writing about the city. And, Francis has adapted to some extent with, being a blogger and using Twitter and things like that. But, Alan Garr is less so. I think he's, stuck in the print version of what he's in. Now he's only writing once a week, so we're sort of seeing less of his influence on civic affairs, I think that what we're doing is, as we're learning and identifying the issues and talking about these things, is that our readers are sort of following along. I can't, I had lunch with somebody today who, I could tell they've been reading City Caucus sort of chapter and verse, and they wanted to discuss some of the issues that we'd raised. So, I mean, it's really exciting to me that more and more people are getting up to speed on how City Hall works.
You've been writing a lot about this e-health situation in Ontario, and I must admit that it hurts my hair sometimes to try to understand it and see what's going on. You seem to draw a connection to Penny Baum, the current city manager here in Vancouver. What is that?
Well, I mean, the difficulty for me in understanding how that'll... I mean, I realize that there are a group of people that have done very well by doing consulting work for the provincial health ministries. And Penny Ballum, when she left her work as a deputy health minister in September 2006, I think, went out and became a consultant. And so it was clear that from just doing a little bit of the reading that we were finding in on the web and in her papers like the Globe and Mail, that there was a kind of a core group of people that followed each other around, a number of people around a company called Courtyard Group, and other consultants that were really kind of succeeding in getting the bids for a lot of jobs. And this is what happened over with eHealth Ontario. I think they had one online health tool that the ministry tried to develop, and it, you know, it kind of didn't. After about 2 or 3 years, nothing happened. So eHealth Ontario was the was meant to be the one that would actually get it the work done. And I think what happened is that they also started to, you know, were spending a lot of the public money and not getting anything done. And so that they started to bring in, and in kind of a panic, if you read the FOI that we had, you know, some of the emails seemed to indicate that, you know, we need to hit this deliverable. The government wants to see, you know, something by the spring. So they kept on talking about the spring deliverable. And, you know, so Penny came in at, you know, her rate is $3,000 a day. And the story, you know, obviously was much larger back in Ontario. The Toronto Star and the Globe and Mail wrote a lot about it. So we just wanted to tell people that somebody, that, you know, one of the central figures in that story was playing a very important role here in the city of Vancouver.
And looking at it and knowing what you know about it, is there more that perhaps there that we don't know?
No, you know what? I can't answer that because there's too many unknowns at this time. I mean, we did FOI'd, Freedom of Information Request, a what work, evidence of work there was in the 5 or 6 weeks that Penny Ballam worked for eHealth. And we found in all of those documents that came to us that she had written, I think, one email and done one PowerPoint presentation. So she'd actually had a 25-page PowerPoint or a 23-page PowerPoint in one email. And she billed $30,000. Now, she did, you know, several hours worth of meetings and flew over to Toronto a couple of times. But, you know, what took place in those meetings and what was discussed and what notes were taken and, you know, how much they benefited from the presence of Penny in the room is not clear. But, you know, that's not really a City of Vancouver issue. I mean, it's the taxpayers of Ontario that have to ask themselves whether they got good value for the $30,000.
Now, you guys at City Caucus, do you make a lot of Freedom of Information requests?
Yes, we do.
I just was talking to David Shrek about an hour ago, and he was talking about some FOI requests that he was making with regards to the provincial government and the
right.
HST. I'm curious. You guys run websites, and you're making these requests. Are these stories? Do you think that the mainstream media aren't? Is this work that they're not doing? Perhaps.
I believe. You know, I've talked to some reporters, and you know, they work very hard to get their stories, you know, in print every day. You know, these days we're seeing, you know, newspapers. You know, cutting back a little bit. So I think that, you know, the real difficulty is time and the patience and the budget. I mean, your likelihood of getting an answer on a Freedom of Information request is, you know, 30 plus days or 30 business days. So, you know, I'm not going to say that the newspapers aren't doing enough. I mean, some of them are clearly trying to work a little bit harder. But I'll say one thing though. Last week there was a story, I only kind of read it very quickly, but it was, I believe, a conference of media companies, and I think that Rupert Murdoch was in the audience or did a keynote or spoke, but the gist of the story, the headline was, media companies say bloggers need to pay, and the thrust of the story was bloggers are reusing and repurposing content from newspapers and other media at no charge, and as a result, you know, they're not getting paid for it. Well, you know, we kind of thought about that, and we thought it was kind of funny because if you look at the newspapers in the past sort of 10 months, there's a heck of a lot of stories that came out of work from City Caucus. I mean, we've been on Global TV, CTV, News World. We've been on the front page of the Vancouver Sun with stories a couple of times. We've been quoted in different articles. So it's kind of a two-way street. So, you know, I'd be very cautious about, you know, making the accusation that we're actually giving a lot, too.
These are interesting times, Mike, as ever. I appreciate this, and we'll continue reading City Caucus.
Excellent. Thanks, Joe.
You're very welcome. CityCaucus.com, MichaelClassen.com, his own website. In Vancouver, I'm Joseph Planta.